An international business consulting firm is looking at all the layers of employee burnout. What leads to it? What happens to the employee? What happens to companies that experience high levels of burnout? Boston-based Bain & Company has found that senior executives get inundated with more than 200 emails a day. The average supervisor spends 8 hours a week sending, reading, and answering emails. And the amount of electronic communication has trended upward over the past decade. We're getting a better understanding of employee burnout this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Eric Garten is a partner at Bain & Company in Chicago. He co-authored Time, Talent, Energy, Overcome Organizational Drag, and Unleash Your Team's Productive Power. And he's a contributor to Harvard Business Review. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Monique Valcour is here. She is an executive coach, management professor, and faculty affiliate of the United Nations System Staff College. We're reaching her in France. Monique, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start out, Eric, by defining burnout. How do you recognize it? What is it?
I guess probably in its simplest term, it's people who feel like they can no longer bring their full selves to work every day. That's probably the maybe broadest definition of burnout. I think it's, it can get so bad that people can no longer come to work every day, which is probably the most extreme form of employee burnout. There are lots of things that have been driving it. I think probably at the heart of it is we've moved into an organizational environment that is sort of a 24/7 always on digitally tethered kind of work environment for most white-collar workers. And that is probably the ultimate root cause of it. But if you look beneath that, you see modern organizations that have grown quite complex. You see what is essentially viewed as kind of costless collaboration thanks to technologies that allow you to communicate with people at virtually any time of the day in various formats. And then I think the last thing is, there has been, since the Great Recession in the United States and around the globe, less worker mobility, I think people feeling more trapped. So the combination of a more demanding work environment plus feeling trapped creates the perfect environment for employee burnout.
Monique, what is the difference between just regular stress at work and actual signs of burnout? Is there a difference?
Yeah, burnout is a three-component occupational stress syndrome, and there's been a pretty robust area of research on this since the early 1980s. And it's interesting now in the intro you were focusing on the idea of digital distraction and cognitive overload, but really this phenomenon was first identified in interpersonal settings, particularly with people who are engaged in social services work. It's also really prevalent in medicine. So there's three main elements to burnout. The first one being a sense of exhaustion, which Eric already alluded to, not just physical exhaustion and feeling really drained when you get home at the end of the day, but also a sense of emotional exhaustion, of just not having any more to give and feeling that you've got very few emotional resources to bring to cope with your different relationships in your life. The second component of it is cynicism. And this often shows up when you see people who entered a field of work out of a real sense of motivation to make a difference, or really feeling called to do that kind of work, whether it's teaching or medicine or law, and who have lost that sense of meaning and oftentimes also feel very cynical about the leadership of the company that they work for, about their peers, and sometimes even about their clients. And then the third element is a growing feeling of inefficacy. So this shows up where people start to feel that they can no longer perform their work. You might have a feeling that, why is this so difficult for me? I've been doing this for so long and I have a high level of expertise. Why is it that I just can't manage to solve the problems that I'm faced with, or I face the same problems again and again? So those are the three main components. You don't have to be high on all three in order to be in a state of burnout. But those are the way that we look at and measure burnout in research.
Eric, when it comes to the research on burnout, the numbers on how common it is vary pretty dramatically. Some research says as few as 7% of professionals have experienced burnout. Other estimates are as high as 62%. Why is the research so gray on this area?
That's a great question. I would be inclined to believe that the higher numbers are probably more accurate. Burnout can be episodic. It would be highly surprising to me to find very many individuals working inside of most large modern organizations that haven't experienced burnout at some point in time during the course of their career. So I would be inclined to think that the higher numbers are probably more accurate. It might be that when we think of the lower numbers, we're talking about the severe forms of burnout when employees literally can no longer perform their job and have to take some kind of leave of absence. I've seen numbers coming out of Harvard and Stanford suggesting that the psychological and physiological costs are over $125 billion a year in the United States alone. I think that probably captures the kinds of individuals who are having to seek external help in order to overcome burnout, and that's probably, you know, the lower end of the estimate of people who actually experience it.
Monique, what are some of the health risks of burnout?
Oh, it really can be very, very severe. So as with other forms of stress, it really undermines your overall physical well-being. People who are in a state of burnout typically have a high level of the stress hormone cortisol in their bloodstream at all times. It takes a long time for that stress hormone to dissipate. It's useful if you're faced with a sudden threat and you need to react with strength or, you know, by running away. It's very damaging to have that kind of stress hormone constantly present, and it's associated with lots of different health risks, including, heart problems, with increased diabetes, with suppressed immune system responses, with just general feeling exhausted and feeling unwell. So there's quite a few indicators of physiological harm, and also a lot of mental health harm as well. I mean, I've worked with clients who, you know, I have a client whose resting heart rate never goes below 100 beats per minute, and whose physician is, you know, giving him the very strong indications that he needs to step away from work for several months in order to regain his basic health.
We're talking right now with Monique Valcour. She is an executive coach, management professor, and faculty affiliate of the United Nations System Staff College. Eric Garten is here as well for this conversation about employee burnout. He's a partner at Bain & Company in Chicago. He's co-author of the book Time, Talent, Energy, Overcome Organizational Drag and Unleash Your Team's Productive Power. You can join the conversation about on-the-job burnout at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced burnout before? What did you do? Are you worried you might have burnout and not sure where to turn? Do you have a high-stress job? How do you make sure you stay energetic, focused, and happy at work? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Eric, why did your company, Bain & Company, an international, you know, business management consulting firm, why did it take up this issue of employee burnout?
I think for us, it was really a sort of an embedded factor in a broader problem that we see, which is organizations that do not make the highest and best use of their human capital. All the factors that conspire to create a working environment that causes us not to allow people to bring their full selves to work every day, that allow us not to use everyone's time productively every day, and to unleash sort of the intrinsic motivation, energy inside of us. So that was the broader problem we were fascinated with. As we've worked with lots of companies around the globe over many decades and personally observed how they get in their own way, that was the topic that we were taking on. And as we dug deeper into it and looked at the human cost, not just the organizational cost, clearly employee burnout was one of those factors that we looked at in more depth.
When the researchers dig deeper on employee burnout, they find several culprits: too much collaboration, few boundaries around time management, and a tendency to overload the most capable employees with too much work. Eric Garden and Monique Valcour stay with us for this conversation. They have both contributed on this topic to Harvard Business Review. Monique Valcour is a business management professor and a career coach. Eric Garten is a partner in the firm Bain & Company in Chicago. We're gathering your insights, your questions on employee burnout at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced burnout on the job before? What did you ultimately do? What did you decide? Are you concerned you might be having burnout right now? Can you take mental health days where you work, or would that be frowned upon? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation after a check of the latest news here on the Ideas Network. A survey by Kronos last year found employee burnout weighs heavily on the minds of HR departments. Avoiding employee turnover was a huge priority for 87% of the HR people surveyed, and half of those respondents who said their biggest problem was employee burnout said it affected as much as half of their annual turnover. We're exploring the signs of on-the-job burnout, what we can do about it with Eric Garten. He's co-author of the book Time, Talent, Energy, Overcome Organizational Drag and Unleash Your Team's Productive Power. And Monique Valcour is a management professor and executive coach. We're also exploring your thoughts on burnout at 800-642-1234. Are you a manager? How do you make sure your employees stay content and engaged with their work? Have you worked at a company where there was a big culture shift to make things better for employees and prevent burnout? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Jim now, who joins us from Oconomowoc. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I am a family physician, and I worked for a large for-profit corporate healthcare organization in Wisconsin. And I experienced burnout professionally after about 25 years. And so I had to make the leap, and I jumped, and I started my own private practice. And I'm much less money, but a lot happier, and provide better care because of it, too. And I used a professional coach to sort of help me guide through that transition, which was pretty difficult, you know. So you're at the edge of that large chasm, and you got to make the jump, and it takes a lot to do that. So what I would say is that, you know, large corporate healthcare, sometimes, or at least healthcare I can speak for, doesn't always understand what it is that creates happiness. And for me, it just takes watching a few, you know, TED Talks and understanding what happiness is about to make that leap. Corporate healthcare could learn from that.
Do you feel like now that you're able to be more in control that you can make your own choices, too, in overseeing how your practice works? Is there more control also as part of this change?
Yeah, definitely autonomy is part of it. You know, what I'm finding, though, as I own a business now, I'm challenging myself to keep my employees happy and content. So it's no different for me than it is for them. And so how do you allow them autonomy and truly to function as a team? So there's so many pieces of it. I think the turning point for me was when I went in for contract negotiations, they wanted to offer more and more money, right? And I finally took a step back and said, I'll tell you what I want. I want a palette, and I want paints, and I want to paint a picture. And they looked at me dumbfounded like I was crazy, and it was an aha moment for me saying, just don't quite understand what it is that creates happiness, at least personally.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience. And I want to get Monique to respond here first to what you said.
Yeah, Jim, that's wonderful to hear that you have been able to find a path in medicine that's more meaningful for you, and that you're also focusing on providing autonomy and supporting the well-being of the others who work with you. That's really important in your field. And it's true, you know, it's interesting. I think one of the important things that Jim just said was that a lot of times the large corporation will think, oh, more, you know, more money or more tools to kind of help you take on more work, and lose sight of what is it that really helps people to be well and to thrive at work and be able to perform well in a sustainable manner. And the words control and autonomy just came up in that conversation, and that's really very much one of the foundational conditions. Do you have control over your workload, how you do your work? You know, I mean, for instance, in large healthcare settings, the electronic record system, which is meant to be a tool to improve management of patients, often for physicians who work with that, it ends up really controlling the amount of time that they're able to spend with patients. So being able to you know, to kind of dictate to a certain extent the conditions of your own work. And that's something that's really important for managers of teams to think about as well. I was delighted to hear Jim mentioning that. You know, what is sort of our collective capacity and how well is each person doing? Oftentimes burnout is a completely hidden problem, even though it's often driven by organizational factors. It tends to be treated as an individual problem, and it oftentimes there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of shame for people who are experiencing burnout that there's something wrong with them. And to the outside, burnout can look like just a low performer or somebody who doesn't have a very high level of motivation, and that tends to really drive the digging in to looking for individual solutions. So it can be a real downward spiral.
Eric Garten, to Jim's comment, do you see companies out there just throwing more money at the problem?
I think it's common to use money, you know, as a reward, you know, to try to stimulate some kind of desired behavior, obviously. And so I think that's the first problem, natural response of most organizations when labor conditions get tight or they start to have high degrees of employee turnover. Or they're afraid of losing talented people. And as we talked about before, it's often the most talented people, the most caring people in your organization that experience burnout to the greatest degree because they tend to attract work inside of companies. So I do think that's a natural response by companies. But I also believe that companies are becoming more enlightened about the true cost of excessive collaboration and employee burnout. And again, as, you know, labor conditions get tighter in markets, companies tend to get smarter about trying to do things that decrease, you know, employee churn in their organization. So you could say it's a little bit driven by the economics and the economic business cycle, but I also think there's a increasingly enlightened management that realizes that in the long term, the health of individuals and the health of their company are completely intertwined and commingled.
Let's go to the phones again at 800-642-1234. Kayla joins us from New Berlin. Hi, Kayla.
Hi. I'm a case manager for adults with schizophrenia. And as you can imagine, my field has a lot of burnout. But our company talks a lot about self-care, and we do have quite a bit of vacation. So, like, self-care-wise, they talk to us about, you know, doing things that you enjoy, taking time to eat well, sleep well, exercise, all that stuff. So the only thing that they're missing is that they don't see it as an organizational piece, which I really liked to hear that, in that I think that my company could improve by seeing it as more something they could improve as opposed to the employees improving. But, yeah, I thought that was a good point.
How do you see that? If it could improve organizationally where you work, what would be your suggestion?
There's a lot of nepotism, and there's also a lot of unprofessionalism and, you know, like bosses telling employees things they shouldn't know and vice versa. So. Yeah, that would be my big problems with it. I also don't like our philosophy that, like, ironically, you talked about autonomy and how that helps. But for me, I don't want to be in charge. I want someone to just tell me what to do and then give me free range to do how I do it. So a lot of the times we'll talk about policies as a team, and I'm like, okay, maybe you can get our input, but I don't want to talk about it as a team. I want you to get everybody's input in supervision and then, you know, come together as a team and be like, all right, we're going to do this. But when we have to, like, sit there and debate for hours, it's just more stressful for me than it would be useful.
Kayla, thank you so much for calling in and giving a kind of a good framework for where you're at. Let's get Eric first to respond. Eric, go ahead.
Well, I really appreciate what Kayla is saying in terms of how much is the organization's contribution to this solving this problem versus the individuals, and I think Monique commented on that as well. I think too often we do expect the individual to solve the problem and don't take ownership of it as leaders inside of companies. And so I think, of course, ultimately individuals have to take care of their own health. They're the final guardian of that. And that often might mean they have to change, you know, employers or professions if they can't find a solution that's going to work for them. But no individual working inside of a modern company can solve this problem on their own. It's like swimming upstream. You can do a lot of things to try to protect your time, all the things Kayla talked about in terms of taking care of your health, taking mental breaks during the day, exercising, eating right. But you have to have the time to be able to do those things. And organizations, I think, have a responsibility to create that time for people to recharge themselves and do the things that they find necessary to allow them to be, you know, a happy, productive employee. And so I do think if I had to put the weight of this responsibility, I'd say it's 80 or 90% on the organization and 10% on the individual. And again, enlightened organizations are starting to take on these problems and creating visibility around the issue itself. So, you know, I appreciate what Kayla's saying a lot in terms of what the individual versus the organization has to do.
Monique, Kayla was interested in having autonomy to carry out the work that is on her plate and yet not having these big, great, long debates and about how or who is going to do what or how a policy is going to be put in place for various things. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, that was a really interesting thing to hear her talk about, you know, so autonomy with respect to how she actually does her work. But it sounds like she's looking for a little bit more of support from above about of taking care of some of those things that may stand as barriers for her being able to apply her full skills to the core work that she's there to do. And so, you know, that points to one of the many things that team leaders and managers can do to help create a more engaging environment where people are less likely to experience burnout. You know, she mentioned also, like, she's observed nepotism and unprofessionalism in her company. And those types of things, we can experience them as violations of our principles around fairness and of our values. So I think it's quite important for leaders to really be paying attention to what's the general tone here and to serve as role models. This is something I've found both in the research I've done and in the literature more broadly, that leaders really sort of control the weather system in their organizations, and they often don't realize the extent to which they send behavioral signals that people are really paying close attention to. You know, so it's vital for leaders to serve as models of civility, of respectful behavior to other towards other people, of self-renewal. You know, so even if you are a manager and you really are a workaholic, you may be writing emails to your team at 11 o'clock at night, but they shouldn't be going out then. You know, they should be going out at 8 in the morning so that you're not sending the message that, no, we expect you to wear yourself down. And any efforts to increase positivity and increase senses of connection can be vitally important. So, you know, emphasizing learning. If there's some kind of a slip-up, rather than looking for whom to blame, say, okay, let's see what we can learn from this experience, how we can go forward and be more productive in the future. Making efforts to really recognize and highlight any kind of small wins that your team is experiencing. You know, I think of Kayla's environment where each caseworker is dealing with their own caseload, and probably there's not a whole lot of awareness of what are our success stories as an organization? You know, who are some of the people that we've worked with who have gone on to really be healthy and to live productive lives? So noting the positive impact of your team's work on others is one small way that leaders can really boost a sense of meaningfulness and a sense of engagement in work.
Kayla, how does this resonate with you? How is this playing with you as you hear Monique respond?
Yeah, actually, our bosses, I agree that they don't do enough on their part, but they do try in the fact that they try to have, like, potlucks and stuff. But because we're a nonprofit, they can't, like, give us a lot. Like, it'd be nice if they, like, threw a pizza party every once in a while or something. But because we're a nonprofit, they just don't have the money. And interestingly enough, I had a argument with a coworker at work, and it turned out to be during a meeting, and I got in trouble for it, and I was accused of burnout and self-care. And that's what they said it was. And I said, no, that's not what it is. He just made me mad, and I reacted poorly. And they encouraged me to get therapy, and they made me take 2 days off. And I was like, nope, this is not burnout. But, you know, interestingly enough, I was blamed for it.
Well, Kayla, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. Monique, in your experience with your clients who are dealing with burnout, is there a certain kind of profile, a certain kind of person who tends to suffer more often?
Not necessarily, you know, because in fact the predictors, the factors in burnout tend to be more concentrated in the job and the organization. That being said, there are some individual differences. So, for example, people who are very perfectionistic often have difficulty stepping away from work. You know, there are people who feel like, oh, this is never quite enough. And if they, once they get into positions of management, they tend to micromanage the people who work for them, which is also a factor in driving up burnout. So, you know, having a high level of perfectionism is one factor. Another thing is just low coping skills. If you are already under stress, for example, from other things in your life, you know, if you're caring for a sick child or parent or dealing with financial difficulties, et cetera, you're probably bringing fewer resources to work with you to help you meet the demands that you encounter there. So it's another real vote for self-care and getting the support that you need. But aside from that, it really is more, you know, burnout is largely an interpersonal phenomenon. You know, I think about Kayla's last example of having a difficult interaction, a conflict with a coworker in the course of a meeting. You know, so one thing that can really help with reducing burnout is to help people to develop mindfulness and emotional intelligence and ability to handle challenging conversations in a way that promotes mutual understanding, for example.
The researchers found these common themes leading to burnout: heavy workloads, job insecurity, and frustrating work routines that include way too many meetings and far too little time for creative work. We're talking about employee burnout, the signs, what to do about it. Perhaps you're feeling this way. Monique Valcour and Eric Garten are our guests. They have both contributed articles to the Harvard Business Review on this subject. Monique Valcour is a management coach and a management professor. Eric Garten is a partner at Bain & Company in Chicago. Both have been writing about this subject. Gathering your questions and your perspectives on burnout at 800-642-1234. Have you worked in countries outside the U.S. before? What differences do you notice between American work culture and other countries? Call in. Tweet us, WPR Mornings, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update. You're listening to the Ideas Network. A new study published in the journal Career Development International found that many employees who are highly engaged in their work are also exhausted and ready to leave their companies. The researchers at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence found that companies risk losing some of their most motivated and hardworking employees due to high stress and burnout. We're learning about how to overcome burnout from an employee perspective and from an HR point of view. Eric Garten and Monique Valcour stay with us to field your questions and your personal experiences. Eric is partner at Bain & Company in Chicago. Monique is an executive coach, a management professor, and faculty affiliate of the United Nations System Staff College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced burnout before? What did you do about it? Are you worried you might have burnout and not sure what options you have? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to John now, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Howdy. I've run crews over the years, and I've had personal burnout, and other people get burned out. And the actual problem starts with the media management. Their lack of understanding of their crews, not knowing them, and their lack of understanding how to properly motivate their individual people on their crews. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. I've worked in California, Minnesota, all over the country. And the main problem is that too many media supervisors think they're in charge of everything instead of realizing they're there to take care of their employees, to see that they're emotionally and physically have everything they need to succeed. Without having a personal relationship with each and every individual, they'll never know that. That's where most people drop the ball.
John, thank you so much. And let's get Eric now to respond to that. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, I do think having, relationships and visibility into what's going on at the individual level is absolutely critical. It's very hard to do that. I mean, obviously, supervisors can do that, frontline supervisors with their direct reports. So it is an obligation, of people, closest to the individuals to have that perspective. It's also interesting that there are some very unique tools out there these days that allow you to get more of a total view of that, both at the organizational level and at the individual level. I'm thinking of this product that Microsoft Workplace Analytics has, used to be called Volumetrics, but will allow you to examine the calendars and email systems that you use as data anonymously to see, how time is being used by the organization and which departments or functions or individuals or specific roles are being overburdened in that company. You can look at it from an individual and a network type of analysis and see, where these burdens are being placed. So, again, I don't think that sort of big data and analytic tool shouldn't replace, direct supervisors from understanding each of their individual employees' sort of situations on a personal basis. But, again, I think there are some comprehensive tools that can give you a total organizational view into this issue as well.
Let's go to Eli now in Eau Claire. Hi, Eli.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, because I'm a construction worker, and a lot of the stuff that we do on the job site is of course, construction and just based on time frame. And when my bosses get angry that we're not being productive or on par with it on schedule, they don't understand the obstacles that we're dealing with out here in the field. And yet when they want us to come in, they just harp on us like getting angry about the job being not progressed instead of putting us as a number on their bid, as what they bid the job for in that criteria and amount. It feels like we're not appreciated, even though we do the job a little bit more than they advance and give the company like 30% more of their 30% more of the bid cost.
Eli, are you prone to burnout?
Oh, I am extremely prone to burnout because of the time frame that we're constantly set on.
Eli, thank you so much. And I want to get Monique in here. Monique, go ahead.
Yeah, I really appreciate both of these last two callers, Eli and John. I think they're really adding to the conversation because neither one of them are working in, you know, a professional setting where we tend to think, oh, this is all about, you know, people who are working 80 hours a week. But really, it extends across all different occupational groups. And they're both talking about really the importance of human relationships, person to person at the front lines, which are absolutely vital. You know, Eli mentions that he has the impression that his supervisor doesn't understand the kind of constraints that he and his colleagues are facing that might cause them to be behind schedule. John was mentioning that, you know, he's observed a lot of problems when an immediate supervisor doesn't really understand each individual on his crew and what motivates them. And this is so vitally important. You know, it's interesting. I work with people in the United Nations who are deployed in conflict zones. And I was coaching somebody last week who talked about, you know, just having to deal with incoming shells and no resources and all this kind of stuff. And all of that he was taking in stride. The one thing that was really stressing him out was the fact that he was receiving directives from headquarters that indicated a total lack of awareness of his conditions on the ground. So one of the things that fundamentally every single human being wants is to have a sense of control, a sense of mastery over their own, over their self, and a sense of connection. And so these are things that any supervisor can make progress on, no matter what field you're in, no matter how many resources you have to work with, is really getting to know each of the people that works for you and stepping in and being shoulder to shoulder on occasion. It's very, very easy as you progress upward in a hierarchy to lose a sense of connection with what exactly are the constraints and the difficulties that people on the front line are facing, and also with what's the wisdom that those people have about how to make our work processes work better so that we can be more productive? And how do we humanize this situation? How do we build a sense of, you know, mutual support? And a lot of it is just as simple as recognizing individuals for the way that they the many ways that they contribute to teams. You know, for some people, it might be about being an incredibly fast worker. For other people, it might be about being a person who mentors others or who, you know, comes and comes forward with useful information that helps everybody to better understand the work that they're doing. So really helping people to feel connected to the collective goals that everyone is trying to achieve as a team, and connecting people to the sense of meaning that's inherent in those goals is vitally important.
Let's go to Jim in Green Lake. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on today's subject. Both of your guests are spot on relative to the needs of people's employees needing to recover, needing to be heard, needing to be able to invest in their work. However, the reality, I believe, is that profit is more important than people in large businesses today. 41-year veteran of the corporate world, and frankly, it's getting more challenging for employees to not burn out and not answering those emails at 11, 11:30 at night in order to be deemed as a team player, dedicated to the company corporate goals and being able to keep their job. So I recently was displaced by a corporate, a very large multi-billion-dollar company here in the state. And frankly, I was displaced because I cared more about people, our customers, our employees, our communities, than I did about the profit and the bottom line. And I found a home in another small business where I started my work career, and I couldn't be happier because they treat people as people and respect people's lives more than the corporate world does. So internationally, I think our small businesses in the U.S. are close to the international attitudes as well. Having worked overseas, I believe that overseas employers are far more employee-friendly and family-friendly organizations. And
Jim, we're going to have to stop there because we are short on time, but I do want to get Eric Garten to respond to your comments, Jim, saying profit can come before people oftentimes. Eric, go ahead.
I think that can be true for companies that are short-sighted and poorly managed. The short-term pressures, especially for publicly traded companies, to show profit, to show efficiency year over year, quarter over quarter, can create bad environments to work in. I think more enlightened companies realize that in the long term, companies that put profits over people are not going to thrive. They're not going to be successful. And they aren't looking at the total cost. They're looking in too short of a time frame. So I do appreciate the fact that there are a lot of modern pressures that can cause companies to adopt that attitude. I think the best companies realize that that's a losing game in the long run, and they have to put people at the center of their organization and their model and their long-term viability and success. So, again, I'm sure there are many bad actors in these models and many companies that lose sight of that. The best companies keep that in line of sight all of the time. And I think they'll be the companies that win over time, and the companies that don't will lose over time.
As we wrap up here, Eric, do you think the workplace norms surrounding mental and emotional health are changing?
I do believe that they are. I believe that companies are seeing that they've got to play the long game here, that they need inspired, engaged employees that can bring their full selves to work every day, that they have to create working environments that allow people to balance the full sets of needs they have, you know, professionally and personally. And when they get that formula right, they create an organization that is inspiring, engaging, creative, highly productive, and they can do that not at the expense of profit. So I believe the best companies out there, and there are many of them, that are beginning to lead the way here around these topics. And so I'm very optimistic about the future here, because I think the best companies have learned this, and they will be the companies that will win and grow over time and send the right signals to others.
Well, Monique and Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Monique Velkor is an executive coach, management professor, and contributor to Harvard Business Review. She's a faculty affiliate of the United Nations System Staff College. We reached her in France. Eric Garten is a partner at the business consulting firm Bain & Company in Chicago. He's co-author of the book Time, Talent, Energy, Overcome Organizational Drag, and Unleash Your Team's Productive Power. He's also a contributor to Harvard Business Review. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.